song. Is it? Anyway. Hello, and welcome to Whose Song Is It Anyway? I'm Dr. Hayley Bosher, and for this special season of the podcast, focusing on women in the music industry, I'll be your host.
Hi, Naomi. Thanks for coming on the Whose Song Is It Anyway podcast today. It's a pleasure to have you.
Hi, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
So can you explain to our listeners who you are and what you do in the music industry?
Yeah, so my name's Naomi Pohl and I'm the General Secretary of the Musicians Union. So I was elected last March on the eve of International Women's Day, so that was really exciting for me. So I've been in the post nearly a year now, and the Musicians Union is a trade union for professional musicians living and working in the UK.
So am I right in thinking that you're the first woman to be in this position in that organisation? Is that right?
Yeah, I am. Yes. So it's our 130th anniversary this year. Wow. And all the previous general secretaries have been men. Yeah, because it's fairly male-dominated union, but I'm hoping that will change a bit whilst I'm general secretary.
Well, exactly. And we talked about this in some of the other episodes, that it's so important to have women in positions of leadership. But at the same time, it's quite easy to be a pioneering woman and a woman in some ways, because there are still so many firsts. I mean, isn't that crazy that you only became the first woman to do this role a year ago? Sometimes this stuff blows my mind, because you think,
I know,
it's 2023, like what? So well done and congratulations, and thank you, I suppose, is what there is to say about that. So how are you finding it in the role? As you said, it's quite a male-dominated organisation, but then I suppose it reflects, it was quite a male-dominated industry, really.
Yeah, that's the thing. I think the music industry is still fairly male-dominated, and the life of a musician, if you're on the road a lot, that's still a male-dominated world. It's a lot of antisocial hours. Safety's an issue. We might talk about that in a bit. So I think, you know, our members, I think we've got 68% men, and the trade union movement has traditionally been quite male-dominated as well. And obviously it depends on the type of union. So the fire brigade union, for example, is very male-dominated. But it's, you know, it's not just those male-dominated professions. I think the trade union movement has been quite macho in the past. And so probably until even 10, 15 years ago, probably a lot of trade unions, the senior jobs were still occupied by men. So I think I've got a double challenge. It's the trade union movement and the music industry. But you're seeing change in the trade union movement as well. Now there's a lot more female general secretaries of unions. Lots of the unions that are striking at the moment. And you're beginning to see change in the music industry too. So, you know, I now go to many fewer board meetings where I'm the only woman, or there's only two of us. You know, it's beginning to change.
Well, that's encouraging to hear. Although I think, like you said, it's still one or two. We've got a while to go maybe before we meet a more reflective in these board meetings, I mean, like when you go into the room, one or two women is obviously good progress, but it's not reflective of the industry. And like you said, alluded to, which we will talk about later, like maybe there's a kind of lots of different reasons why we don't see women in positions of leadership, but also why we don't see so many women thriving in the industry in general. So my first question is about, let's talk about your experience first, and then we'll move into talking about more generally. How has it been for you as a woman in leadership in the music industry? Like, what's your experience been? And it kind of sounds maybe like an obvious question, but are you aware of your gender as part of your role? Do you know what I mean? Because I feel like this is something where if you were a man in this position, it wouldn't even really be a conversation, and maybe you just glide through the day not really noticing your gender. And I just wonder if it's something that, I mean, I kind of assume your answer, do you know what I mean? But I'm going to let you speak. So, yeah, do you think that are you consciously aware of your gender in your role, and how has it been your experience of being a woman in leadership in the music industry?
Well, I think as a woman, you're judged more on very different criteria to men. So there's a lot of kind of, yes, I'm aware of my gender, definitely. And I'm aware of, how I interact with men in the industry, how I interact with other women in the industry. Simple things like wearing makeup or how you dress, it's a consideration. It's a factor that men don't have to consider, that you might be judged according to what you wear and your appearance. I mean, I've been lucky to have a lot of male support. So when I was running for election last year, I had a lot of male supporters who are experienced men in the industry. That's been brilliant. But, you know, the fact that I have to say I'm lucky to have had that in itself, you know, I check myself and think, why should I be lucky to have that support? I'm perfectly capable of doing the job and I'm experienced myself. But I think, you know, there's probably been fewer female role models. So, yeah, it has been a challenge. And it's a, you know, you have to assert yourself and you have to make it clear that you are on an equal footing with male counterparts. It's not a given. It's not a given that people would just accept you as an equal, unfortunately.
And what would you say is some of the key challenges in terms of that experience? So you've kind of mentioned a few of them, being that you have to assert yourself and almost like prove yourself before somebody will accept that you're capable of doing the role as a woman. So for you, what would you identify as like the key challenges around kind of that experience?
Well, I mean, I observe how men in the industry act around other women. And I think when you observe it, it's, you know, it makes you paranoid, but not just paranoid. I mean, there's a reason to be concerned. The language that I hear just used to describe women in senior positions is very different to the language that you hear to describe men in senior positions. So if a woman is strong and opinionated, you tend to hear a lot more negative language around that. It's not seen as a positive necessarily. I frequently hear women being described as mad and crazy, whereas you don't tend to hear that about men in leadership positions. Very frustrating. Women being dismissed and joked about in a way that men just aren't. So I think that you enter the room and you have to prove yourself, whereas if a man shows up to a board meeting in a suit, everyone assumes that he knows what he's talking about, which is very disappointing and depressing. But yeah, I feel like during the election process, I was constantly saying, I've worked in this industry, not just in music, but in the arts for 20 years. And I've literally done this my whole career. I've worked for trade unions in the arts my whole career. But, you know, I was repeating myself because, you know, you just feel that there's a sense that you might not be considered as experienced as a man that you're up against. So, yeah, that's really challenging. But I think I was reflecting, I think since I got the job, actually, I haven't encountered misogyny myself directly, but I do witness it. And we receive reports of misogyny and sexual harassment at the MU. So it's something, unfortunately, I'm constantly aware of. And I did encounter some sexism during the election process itself. So it's definitely out there and I definitely have experienced it. But I would say since I got the job so far, I've had a lot of support and that's been really good.
That is really, really encouraging to hear. So during that time, like you said, when you did experience the sexism and misogyny, like you come across as such a confident person. And I basically was just wondering and thinking about people listening to this, how do you stay so confident and assertive? You know, you've said like, I have this experience and I can do this job. Like when you say it, I really believe you. And I just wonder if you...
Thank you.
Well, you know what I mean? Where it's like you, when someone says something, yeah, like it, that, I believe you, that's authentic and true. And I'm just thinking of, especially some of the other conversations I've had on this season about women feeling not able to say that their expertise in the way that you do. So I was just wondering if you had any kind of tips or advice, or if there's something that you could share around, have you always been that confident or is it something that's come over time?
I think I present as being very confident, and I am confident in my abilities, and I am confident that I can be cool in a crisis. So I think it comes with having dealt with a lot of crises. You know, there's always a challenge. There's always something that we need to deal with. And I'm probably a fairly kind of, I would say, fairly relaxed in a crisis, kind of still smiling kind of character. I hope I am anyway. However, I would say that I do suffer with anxiety and I've had some sleepless nights when something's been going wrong at work, like everybody else does. And I think that there's some imposter syndrome. I think most women suffer with that, unfortunately. Probably more women do than men, where you have that moment in the middle of the night where you think this could all go wrong. Do I know what I'm doing? But, you know, yeah, I think my confidence comes with experience. But also, I would say I was a drama student, which also gives me a certain confidence about public speaking. I'm not afraid to stand up in front of a room of people. That said, when I was really heavily pregnant, I was supposed to be doing a reading at a friend's wedding, and I was so heavily pregnant that I was really struggling to stand up for long periods of time. And so I've never had a problem with public speaking, but I had to stand up at this wedding, hugely pregnant, and I actually got up and I just said, I can't do it, because can someone please get me a chair? And it's the only time I think that I've had that moment of, oh my goodness, I'm actually not going to be able to go through with this. And it was obviously mortifying, but people were very understanding about it. But since then, I've had that little, you know, jelly knees moment when I stand up to public speak, because you think, what if I can't go through that with this? What if I just faint on the spot? Thankfully, that hasn't happened to me. It doesn't stop the thought. So I'm really confident and I love my job and I love the team of people that I work with and I have complete and utter faith in them. So I think that really helps as well. And I think, I don't know, I think women are quite good at that kind of, you know, deferring to experienced team members. And, you know, yeah, that gives me confidence that when I've had a crisis, I've always had a team of people around me that I can call on. So I don't feel alone in the job. And that's really important as well. I think that if I could give anyone advice, it would be that make sure you've got that team of people around you that you can rely on. So if you are in a tricky spot, you've got someone that you trust on the end of the phone to give you advice and give you support.
I think that's a really good tip. There's so much to be said for a community, whether that's in your job and your team or your friends or a support network, whatever it is. I think you're right that that really helps, knowing that you're not alone in whatever the challenge is that you're facing. I can totally relate to the imposter syndrome thing as well. I mean, I've done interviews before where I've been revising from my own book that I wrote before because I'm doubting that I'd know the answers to the question. I think this is absurd. I wrote the book, but you just have that moment of like, I don't know anything. It's not
true. The idea that it's being able to recall the right fact at the right moment. And, you know, I'm sure you can. And we do when we're on the spot. But, I'm sure there's scary moments for everybody. I'd love to know if guys experience that. But a lot of them don't talk about it. So you imagine that they go through life just cruising along.
Yeah, that's a really good point, whether we're just assuming that they do. Because like you said, you can be really confident. And I'm also a confident public speaker. I also was a drama student. So clearly we had the same training that put us in a position.
Great.
I can stand on a stage and talk. And same with, like, you know, I lecture. So I can talk to a room full of 500 students and I don't batter an eyelid. There are other things that terrify me, but that's not one of them. But yeah, I do wonder if that affects women more. My theory is that it does, and that's because of the things that you said earlier, which is the environment is not fostering that confidence because we're being chipped away at by these comments, different languages, used for different, like, if the man behaves in a certain way, it's described differently. And like you said, you feel judged for what you're wearing, and because they're not judged for what they're wearing, and therefore they don't have those overthinking, overanalyzing thoughts. So I think that the societal and the industry really kind of behaviours and that structural sort of sexism doesn't foster confidence in women, in my experience. We're kind of having to push back on that.
Yeah, and I think also I find criticism stays with me. I'm not somebody that takes criticism particularly well. I can't help but take it really personally. It's just my personality. So, and I'm a people pleaser, so I want everyone to like me. And obviously in a job like this, not everyone's going to like you. Not everyone's going to agree with you. That's okay. And sometimes you have to say things that are controversial that people won't agree with. But yeah, criticism. I had once when I was in my 20s and I was in a fairly senior job in a union, and a male colleague said, that they weren't sure that I had the right level of gravitas. And that stuck with me. But I do think that was a gendered comment. So I listened to a brilliant podcast the other day, and the advice was, when you receive a lot of criticism, which you will do if you're in the public eye, and particularly if you're a woman in a kind of public-facing role, then you can filter out all of the criticism that's gendered, and you might find that you've actually not got a lot of criticism left. If you filter out anything that basically, I walk around sometimes thinking, would you say that to a man? And if you wouldn't say it to a man, then don't say it to me. And if I could filter out that criticism that's gendered, I think that would help a lot.
That's such a good tip, because I think, like you're saying, when you filter it out, then, and maybe there's good feedback left at the end, but there probably isn't that much.
Yeah.
And like you said, would you say that to a man? Probably not. Like the thing you said were so true, like words like crazy, bossy, bitchy, all these words. You don't say those things about a man who might have behaved in the exact same way, or even more rude or more assertive. And you're like, oh, he's making far harsh decisions. And then a woman would do the same thing, and it's like, you know, she's reckless, like you said, crazy, or these different terminologies which are so loaded.
Well, I was just going to say, also highly paid women in the music industry. You'd hear a bit of, are they worth the money? Whereas you don't hear that about highly paid men in the industry. And we're still in a position where the three major labels are run by men. You know, it's still, there's still a significant imbalance there.
And there's so much pressure for the women. You know, we mentioned earlier about you're the first woman to do something, or even the second woman to be in a certain role or a position. There's so much pressure not to f*** it up, because it's not like, because there's a different level of judgment, and there's also just that kind of, I always think about, like, you know, a female president or prime minister or something. It's not the same, because they're like, as soon as they do something, it's like, well, she's a woman, she can't do it. And you feel the pressure of your whole, you know, gender rather than if you are.
I know.
Yeah. So do you feel that?
Yeah, definitely. I think anybody from a minority group feels that, and also there's intersectionality about it as well. Unfortunately, I've definitely heard other colleagues in the industry say that, and it's the sort of Liz Truss effect, isn't it? Like, this is going to set women back for a period of time, because if a woman's seen not to have done a good job, and yet, you know, how many men have we seen not do a good job, and yet somehow that doesn't set their gender back? No one says, well, men can't run companies because that man made a mistake, you know. It's very targeted towards us, but it's the same goes for other minority groups as well. And, you know, representation of women is getting better in the industry, but representation of other minority groups isn't. Still not enough kind of global majority people in high profile positions, or people with disabilities, or LGBTQ plus colleagues. So we've still got a very long way to go as an industry.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think it's like a confirmation bias thing, where it's like, if we already have this conscious or unconscious presumption in our minds, because we grew up in a patriarchal society that tells you that women should be in the kitchen and not in the bedroom, that then when a woman does something wrong, it confirms that conscious or unconscious bias, which I think that's why it doesn't apply to men, because we already, even as women, we're programmed to believe that the man would do a better job. This is not something that is necessary. You have to unlearn all of that from society, and from maybe even from generations. Like, our group, I mean, my family was predominantly kind of organized and run by women. So I have this like preconception that women are like super capable and not so much on the man's side. But I have friends who it's the other way around. Their parents are a more traditional relationship where the mum never worked and the dad does all the DIY. So they're like, men are useful and women are lovely. You know, like, this is a whole gendered categorization, which I think then that's how the confirmation bias thing plays into when something like Liz Truss happens, or any woman makes like a wrong decision, or it might not even be that they made a wrong decision, but, you know, it falls on them in the situation, that it's like, oh yeah, that's where the setback comes from. So there is a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
A lot of pressure. So yeah, I wanted to go back to something you said earlier about in the MU hearing from your members about their experience as women in the music industry. And also to just to confirm and kind of agree with you on the intersectionality of it, because we totally have to acknowledge the fact that, you know, in this season we are focusing on the experience of women, but of course it includes all women, and we have to acknowledge and kind of work harder in a way to improve the situation, as you said, of other minority communities, whether that's people of colour or disabled people, or because that, for me, you know, there's different like waves of understanding of feminism, and I don't really want to like get into a whole theory of it, but when we're trying to be more inclusive, obviously that means everyone. I mean, it's obvious to me, but it's not obvious to everyone. So that's what I just wanted to kind of confirm for anyone who wasn't sure.
Yeah.
So yeah, can you talk a bit about what you've seen in your position in the Musicians Union and what the more general experience is of women in the music industry?
Yeah, so my particular perspective, I suppose, is female musicians or musicians who are from a gender minority. So we receive a lot of reports of sexual harassment. We, during the Me Too movement, there was a lot of talk about when's music's Me Too movement going to begin. So we thought, well, let's go out and survey our members about sexual harassment. And also we set up a service so that anybody, we started off with our members and then we expanded it so anybody working in the music industry could report instances of sexual harassment to us and get some signposting, get some advice. We've provided legal advice to people. Basically, what we try and do is give a survivor an idea of what their options are. So we had some training from Rape Crisis who said, the important thing is that the person who has experienced the harassment or abuse is completely in control of what they do next, because they were probably out of control in the experience when they experienced it. But you've got to make sure that they are in full control of what happens next and what action they decide to take. So it's very survivor-led. So we try to give some advice on what people's options are, and then they can decide whether they want to go forward or not. And unfortunately, a lot of people don't take complaints forward to the police in particular, because the stats aren't great around, you know, actual convictions, and it's such a difficult process to go through. But we've had hundreds of reports. We're still getting probably a report every week of some form of sexual harassment. Obviously, there's been a lot of online harassment, particularly during the pandemic when people weren't out there working. But I was actually shocked how many reports we got during the pandemic when people were, in theory, sitting at home. They weren't out on the live circuit. They weren't touring. And I was also shocked at the extent of sexual harassment across every area of music. So it wasn't just in the studio and it wasn't just at festivals. It was also in orchestras. It was also in the theatre pits. So it felt like no workplace was entirely safe. And I've just been reading today an article in The Guardian about female composers. Again, you might think female composers are primarily working from home. Obviously, they're working in studios as well, but again, experiencing all sorts of inappropriate behaviour. So unfortunately, it is really widespread. And it's difficult because people don't report because they're afraid that it might have an impact on their own career. And sadly, that does happen. So we do get reports where somebody says, well, they did complain to someone at work, and then they found that male musicians aren't booking them again for work, because you're relying not only on employers and engagers to book you, but you're also relying on other musicians to book you. So if word gets around that you're a troublemaker, in inverted commas, it can actually harm your career. I hate to say this because I wouldn't want to discourage anybody from reporting. And I think if you have experienced something inappropriate, please do reach out to us, because we're there. We'll provide you with advice in complete confidence. There'd be no obligation for you to take any further action if you decide you don't want to, but we're there to at least signpost some help. Also, help musicians. I've got a service called Music Minds Matter, and as part of that, they've actually got specially trained counsellors who are there to deal with reports of sexual harassment. So if you've experienced anything like that, there are places you can go to get help, and it's all in confidence. We've had one or two anonymous reports, but actually most people will report to us using their real name, but they do want confidentiality because they are afraid of the consequences. So we've had reports ranging from a group of experienced session players, all female, being booked to go and play with a major artist. When they turn up, they're basically given toy musical instruments and hot pants to wear. So it obviously wasn't a serious engagement. They weren't expected to play their instruments. They were just there to look a certain way. We've had reports of labels kind of completely taking control of musicians' lives, signing an artist, not giving them any access to money, providing them with accommodation, dictating when they can eat, dictating when they can go to the toilet. Horrific. I mean, it's like it crosses into coercive control. We've had reports of rape, you know, which is obviously completely horrendous. We've had reports of inappropriate touching, things that go on backstage, things that go on tour, in tour buses. So I'm very focused on women's safety and the kind of environments that women work in, because sometimes it comes down to not having appropriate changing facilities, or the tour bus needs to make a stop at a toilet so that women can go and have some privacy to go to the bathroom. I mean, you'd think that this sounds standard, right? But unfortunately, a lot of these environments are still male-dominated. So you've got men in the decision-making position, and it's hard for women to talk about what they actually need. So yeah, I'm sorry to talk about such a grim subject, but it's very important. And I'm glad that there is an inquiry going on at the moment, a government inquiry into misogyny in the music industry, because we need action and we need changes in the law so that freelancers have better protection. The other thing I can mention is that there is an independent standards authority that's being established to look after broadcasting, music, theatre, fashion, film. And it should be a place where people will be able to go to make a report and then have an independent investigation. Because if you've got two freelancers, they might be working on a project together and it's time limited, and then they go away. And then who's responsible if a report's made? Who's responsible for investigating it? Sometimes the employer or engager will just wash their hands because they say, well, you know, it didn't happen on our watch, or we don't actually employ either of you, so there's nothing we can do. There's no HR process to follow. So we're campaigning within the industry to also make sure that policies and procedures apply to freelancers as well as employed people, because it's much tougher if you're a freelancer, you know, and you feel like you're on your own. One of the reasons the union exists is so that freelance musicians aren't on their own. We're a collective of 33,000. We've got legal advice available. We've got support available. So, you know, you don't have to feel like you are completely isolated.
I think that's the thing, isn't it? And there's so much to unpack there, but that's what the Musicians Union is there for. And it's so good. I mean, I know it's not nice to talk about the things that people are reporting and it's horrible, but it's so important to speak. And the truth is that these things are being reported. And I think for some people, hearing about the fact that these things are being reported might encourage them to also report and feel less alone. If these things have happened to you, you're not alone. It's happening, like you said, in every sector of the music industry. So actually, I'm glad that you shared that, because I think it would be really encouraging for some people to know that they're not alone. And also for just generally us better understanding what the landscape is really like, in terms of, as you said, the safety and even things like you said about the toilet. Sometimes it's that a woman hasn't been part of the decision-making process, like you said, so the needs of the women are not known in a world where we're only making decisions based on a man's need at that time, because there would have been a period of time where there weren't any women on the tour bus, and so they didn't have to think about, well, what about when a woman has a period? Like, you know, it was never a factor that you have to consider. So that's why it's so important to have these conversations and open up these discussions, because to enable women to feel that they can voice their needs and their concerns, and then also that they're heard and that it's receptive. And I'm really glad that you pointed out to the different resources that are available, and I'll make sure to link to all of those in the podcast details. So you kind of alluded to some of the things. I want to kind of shift a bit to think about what can we do to make the music industry safer and more inclusive for women and minority groups. You mentioned about policies and the music and misogyny report and maybe some other things that are happening, which is really good progress. So what, but for you, what do you think, do you have things that you're like, these are some things that we could do that would just make a tangible difference to the safety of women in the music industry? And that's both in terms of like, what can we do as a community? And then also what does like the industry and the government policies, what kind of things need to happen to make it safer and more inclusive?
I mean, I've got a very long wish list, so I warn you, but I've got 5 years in the job and, you know, we're going to try and tick off as many of these things as possible. So I mentioned changes in the law. So at the moment, third-party harassment isn't something that you can make a claim about. So if you've got two freelancers working on a project, it should be possible for the employer or engager in that position, who's in a position of power there, to actually be held accountable for anything that happens on the job. Even if it's two independent contractors, one harasses the other, it should be the engager's responsibility. So there's changes in the law, changes to the Equality Act to make sure that freelancers are properly covered, recognition that you might have more than two protected characteristics that lead to discrimination. So it should be possible to take a claim based on more than two characteristics. So there's quite a lot of things like that that would make a difference. Some of those things have already been promised by the government, but they've not followed through and actually changed the law yet. So that's something we need to push them on. Within the industry, I think there's a wider conversation about safety when it comes to freelancers. Things like thinking about how your female colleague's going to get home at night. So we have a lot of musicians who tour. So say you're on a theatre tour, for example, and your expenses payments for accommodation and travel don't actually cover the cost of staying in a hotel and getting a taxi or getting a train, whatever. What you end up doing is taking decisions that make you less safe. So you'll end up staying somewhere cheap that's a really, really long way from the venue, trying to get back there late at night, maybe car sharing, maybe trying to drive home through the night after a gig so that you don't have to pay for accommodation. So all of these things lead women to make less safe choices. I had a horrific story recently told to me by a freelancer involving, you know, finishing really late at night and then having to hang around in a multi-story car park in the dark. These sorts of things. And I really feel very strongly that if you're employing or engaging somebody, then those kinds of things should be taken into account. You should be thinking through, are they going to be safe in the workplace? And have they got enough money to get home safely? Have they got enough money to book a decent level of accommodation? I think representation. So I think if we had a truly diverse industry and the decisions were being made by a more diverse group of people, I think it would be a safer industry to work in. As we've discussed, we've got a long way to go. I think, you know, even within the union, we've had feedback that if you're a black musician and you can't speak to a black official about discrimination that you've experienced, you know, is that a barrier to you getting in touch with us and reporting something? So we've got a lot to do, I think, internally as well to make sure that we're fully representative of our members and the wider industry. Our committees need to be more diverse, for example, which is something we've been working on. We're being really proactive about that. We've now established informal networks. We've got a network for musicians who experience racism. We've got a network for our LGBTQ plus members. We've got a women's members network, a disabled members network. And these are kind of very informal groups. They're led by members within those groups. And the idea is that they can actually come up with recommendations for us. And the more they experience working with us, hopefully we'll get to a position where there is trust there. They want to actually become a formal part of the community. They want to join a committee and they want to help influence MU policy. So there's things like that that we can change. I think more organisations looking at their board level representation, making sure that when they recruit staff, they are really genuinely an equal opportunities employer, thinking about the language in the job ad that you put out so it's not exclusive, not putting barriers in place. So yeah, there's so much that we could do. There's a lot of work already happening and you can see progress, but it's still slow. People are very protective of their positions. It takes time to bring through more leaders from diverse backgrounds. So yeah, it's a fairly big ongoing project, but you know, there's kind of things that people can do immediately. So somebody phoned me, for example, and said, how can I make sure that I'm booking more diverse musicians? And I said, well, whenever you're booking freelance musicians, just say to the fixer or whoever it is who's doing the booking, I want to see a diverse lineup. I mean, that's something that you can just instantly do. It doesn't have to be a long process. Just do it. You know, you couldn't, it's not positive discrimination, it's positive action, making sure everyone has equal access. So yeah, I feel frustrated at the rate of change, but I'm determined to try and push things forward a bit.
Well, that was such a comprehensive answer. I feel like we should just let you crack on with this agenda. Because yeah, there's some really good, and like you said, these are things that, some things that will take time, because as you say about the progress and diversifying boards and things like that, but there are also things that could happen tomorrow. Like, we could change the law to make it easier to enforce rights. And like you said, diversifying, like a lineup, I think the data for like women and minority groups in like festivals and stuff is absolutely astonishing. Like, how can you not? It's like when you said just ask for a diverse lineup. I just think it's really bizarre that you would organize a festival and put together your lineup, and someone shows you, even like the marketing person is like, here's the flyer or whatever it is, and you don't look at it and think, oh, there's no women on here. Like, it doesn't occur.
I know. But you know why it doesn't occur? It's because most people who are booking are men, so they're not thinking like that, unfortunately. And actually, there's been the new report, which I'm sure you've seen, about use of algorithms in music streaming, and guess what, the algorithms tend to favor white men. So artificial intelligence, it just absorbs all of the bias that's out there on the internet already and exists in society, and then they just perpetuate it. So yeah, it's very difficult, but I think as long as we've got, if music venues are majority, you know, led by men, then we're going to still end up with more male-fronted bands being booked to perform. Same goes for record labels. You know, only diversity can bring the change that we want to see. And as you say, inclusion's about everybody. So it's about older people and younger people, and it's about all the different protected characteristics that we have. So at the moment, we're just not reflecting the diversity in the music industry in terms of kind of performers and musicians and creators within the more formal structures that we have in the trade bodies and the labels and the publishers, etc. So we'll get there, though. We will get there.
I think so. I feel quite motivated after this conversation, actually. I feel like I'm getting the energy from you. This is going to happen. So before I ask you the last question, we've talked a lot about the Musicians Union and some of the work that you're doing and help musicians, but I just wanted to give you an opportunity. Is there anything else that you want listeners to know about, or anywhere they should go in terms of your website and things that you want to point them in the direction of?
Well, one of the things we do, as well as providing advice and services to members, we provide legal advice, I think I mentioned, those sorts of things, and insurances. We also do a lot of campaigning work. So yeah, if anyone wants to check out our website, even if you're not a musician yourself, you can actually join for free as a supporter. So basically, if you're interested in music, if you love music, you can join as a supporter, and we'll keep you in touch with all of our campaigning work. But we are very good at putting out calls to action. So if there's something you're passionate about, for example, ending sexual harassment in the music industry, on the campaigns page of our website, you can see information about writing to your MP. We provide template letters, so you can do that really easily. We also have calls to action, like signing petitions. So if you want to get active and you want to help, then we've always got things up on our website that you can do. Yeah, so that would be the first port of call, I think, for anyone interested.
Great. Well, hopefully people are feeling as rammed up as I am by what you've been talking about, and they go to the website and check out all of this amazing work that you're doing. So thank you. My last question, which I'm asking everybody on this season, is, can you share with us a favorite female music maker of all time ever, and also someone that you're appreciating currently? I know it's a tough question, so
Well, all time ever, I'm going to say Skin from Skunk Anansie, because when I was a teenager, I was absolutely obsessed. And I think she was just brilliant, kind of, you know, so different from other female artists that were around at that time, like with that level of success. And just, yeah, just fueled all of my teenage angst in the best possible way. And artists that I'm listening, well, Arlo Parks is one of my recent faves. I completely love Arlo Parks. So she's great. There's a band called Daughter that I really love as well, who are female. Yeah, brilliant. So that's just a couple that I've picked.
Thank you. Well, that's the thing. There are so many, and I think it's just important to, well, I'm making a playlist, basically, of everyone's answers, so listeners can go and check out if they're people you haven't heard of before, or the legendary ones. Usually it's like, oh yeah, I haven't listened to them for ages. So we'll put together a little playlist to celebrate some women in the music industry who are, as I said in the beginning, usually pioneering, because since there's not that many, it's quite easy to be a pioneering woman in the music industry, in the sense that you're quite often the first person or the second person to be doing something, you know, hitting a threshold or being the most well-known female of that genre or something, because there's not that many. But thank you so much, Naomi. It's been a real pleasure to talk to you today, and it's been honestly really insightful, and I really do hope that listeners go and check out the website and all the amazing work that you're doing and get involved in the campaigns, and we'll be right there with you on your future wish list of hopefully making things safer and more inclusive for everyone in the music industry.
Brilliant. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening. And if you enjoyed this episode, please like, share, and subscribe.